Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Hi, welcome to another ChrisMartinson.com podcast. I am, of course, your host, Chris Martinson, and today we're speaking with Turd Ferguson, founder and proprietor of the precious metals weblog TFMetalsReport.com. Turd was a licensed securities professional for nearly 20 years until leaving the profession in 2008, disillusioned apparently, to become a self-described serial entrepreneur. Since then, he's become one of the more popular, and for sure one of the most colorful, voices advocating for gold and silver ownership by the average investor. Every month, hundreds of thousands of readers visit his weblog, eager for his analysis, as well as his very specific short-term price predictions for where the metals are headed. 2011 has been characterized by tremendous price volatility, both gold and silver experiencing that. And at the time of this recording, it looks like both are starting to show maybe some breakout potential here. Turd, I'm thrilled to have you on this week and help make sense of all this volatility and drama in the precious metals. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. It is my pleasure. It is a real honor to get a chance to visit with you. So, fire away.
Oh, the pleasures are. So, listen, you dedicate your website to, I'm quoting here, the end of the great Keynesian experiment. So we can already infer a lot about your level of confidence in the economic status quo here, as well as why you're so focused on precious metals, by the way, same reason I focused on them a while back. Before we dive into the details here, can you give us a little more background about your macroeconomic worldview, you know, your expertise and the direction at which you come at this material?
Well, I guess we come at it from a number of different directions. I guess in the end, it's almost just a real-world experience. The numbers are what they are. The facts are what they are. And to the extent that the media or the, you know, the shady powers that be that we all talk about would want to convince you otherwise, I think we are rapidly approaching the end game. And it is an end game of an exponential growth of debt that cannot possibly be serviced and can't possibly be grown out of, as they say. And so knowing that that moment is coming, I guess it kind of falls upon all of us to, if we've had a vision of that future, we're not supposed to just keep that candle under a bushel basket. We're supposed to go out and try to tell as many people as we can to warn them. And that's what we try to do at TF Metals Report.
So the exponential accumulation of debt can't go on forever, you say?
No, I guess if you ask Paul Krugman, he probably would tell you that it could. But at some point, no, you know, and we've with the average maturity now on federal debt, it has actually crept up some. It's closer to 5 years, but the average, interest rate on that debt that the federal government is paying is somewhere in the neighborhood of 4%. And it equates to $300 to $350 billion a year of interest debt service alone in the budget. Those rates, as everyone knows, are historically low and certainly aren't reflective of economic conditions or ongoing inflation. If rates were ever to, well, let me step back. If the Fed were to exit the interest rate market and rates were allowed to seek their own natural equilibrium of buyers and sellers for bonds, interest rates could go to 10%, could go to 15%, whatever you would think that buyers of fixed income would demand for the risk that they are taking, especially inflation risk. And if you triple the interest rate that the federal government is paying on its debt, well, then the debt service is going to triple. And then you have to borrow more money to try to fund the ongoing operations. And the whole thing rapidly spins out of control. And that is where I think we're quickly headed. That, you know, they always say as a credit card holder, you're supposed to pay off your interest, at least your interest every month, because you don't want that law of compounding interest working against you. And, well, unfortunately, it is working against all of us at the present time.
I've written about that great endgame debt spiral as well. It's just a natural one. It's the one Greece finds itself in at, what, 220% plus for 1 year paper. And it's a very simple spiral to understand. The more your interest rates go up, the more you need to borrow to cover the interest rates. And the more you borrow, the more your interest rates go up. And we just spiral around that. Off we go. So I see that as kind of an endgame. And so if the Keynesian experiment is approaching its end, which means – you know, that we can't just constantly inflate our way out of every difficulty. And by the way, we tried to inflate our way out of good times too. It didn't matter, right? Good times, bad times, you know, money was created well, and by money I mean credit, well in excess of underlying nominal GDP growth, and it didn't, it really was independent of whether it was a crisis or a good moment. And so here we are, addicted to this grand credit experiment coming to an end, which in your view also means the collapse of the U.S. dollar's purchasing power as we know it. Other analysts, myself included, have also been advocating that investors gain a lot of exposure to gold, silver less extent in my case, as some defense against this outcome. I like both metals, but for actually entirely different reasons. How do you think of gold? And when you look towards the future, what do you predict there? And same questions for silver when you're done with that.
Well, let me stop you for a second, Chris. You mean in terms of price?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Trend?
Or purchasing power preservation, however you want to look at that.
Okay. I try not to make it too complicated. You mentioned earlier the 20 years I spent in, we'll call it the financial services industry, in securities industry. I found that so many of these topics really get confusing to people very quickly, and not to make it sound like we dumb it down or anything, but I think to get people to really understand, you've got to keep it on a rather simple level when you're approaching the masses. And so the way I put it for gold and silver, so that people understand why you would buy them, is that gold protects your wealth. It is the only currency that doesn't have, and here's a term for you and I and for everybody, it doesn't have counterparty risk. It is what it is, and it has been money for thousands of years. And so if you want to protect your wealth versus some wealth destructive event, you own gold. If you want to protect your purchasing power, a similar precious metal that functions as money is silver. Purchasing power, if anything, just because it's less in price, you can't walk around with one gold coin worth $1,600 or $2,600 or $4,600 in your pocket and expect to maybe barter with it. But in terms of, you know, if the day ever came that you did need to, for whatever apocalyptic reason, you needed some store of money that you could trade with, well, silver accomplishes that. And again, because they are money, they can't be devalued. And as the U.S. dollar and other fiat currencies are devalued, you continue to see the value of gold and silver go up. Where do they go from here? Gosh, that sure is hard to say. And it's hard to say exactly how fast they will go. But if anything, I know they're not going to be going down over long periods of time. People have given me a lot of credit for being able to help people control their emotions when we get into corrective cycles, which invariably come in any bull market. You get short-term corrections. The reason I'm always so confident that a correction is going to turn is, well, because the fundamentals are so strong. Prices may go down, reflecting a short-term change in trading sentiment, but the long-term fundamentals are so strong because of that debt spiral that you and I just talked about and the devaluation of fiat currency. Therefore, as long as those fundamentals stay the same, gold and silver are going to keep going higher. How fast it's going to depend upon, and how far is going to depend upon how quickly the spiral continues to play out. So I have my targets for 2012, and frankly, they are they're targets just because they're a continuation of the trend that we've seen from early part of this century. Gold has averaged about 20, maybe 25% a year. It allowed me a year ago this time to project 1750. We certainly have seen that and beyond, and we're trading, as we talked, near 1800. Let's take the closing price on December 31st and add 25% to it and don't be surprised to see us trade somewhere near there in 2012, that's for sure, 2300, something like that.
Yeah, you know, I ask about prices and targets because, you know, a lot of people expect to see it. I actually switched off of targets a while ago. I'm more in the view of Eric Sprott gave a nice presentation at the Casey Summit, and he said, look, who cares about price? Let's look at the ratios that matter. How many barrels of oil can an ounce of gold buy? How many ounces of gold does it take to buy a house, a car, other things. And so when you look at many of these things that you care about, because that's what I care about. I care about I earn money, I save it. And when I get to the future, I'd like to be able to, you know, obtain the things I hope to obtain. So what I really care about, how are the trends out there? And right now, all of those key trends in terms of houses, oil, food, stocks, anything I care about, when you measure it in gold, you find that you're just really in a very, very powerful bull market at this point in time, with fewer corrections in it than you see with the dollar price. So instead of worrying about the dollar price of gold, I'm worrying about the gold price of other things. And it's been a useful sort of a flip for me.
Right. Well, and along those lines, it always gets back on my side. It gets back to just, are you stacking it, or why are you holding it in the first place? If you're going to get all upset because the fiat price of gold went down a couple hundred dollars in September, well, why are you holding it in the first place? Because I can assure you by next year at this time or 2 years at this time, it's going to be higher than it is today. So if you're going to be upset about a drop, it's only probably because you were trading futures or ETFs or something, and it caught you in the downdraft. But if you're buying it simply as protection, if you're buying it because you know what's going on in the world and you can see how this is all going to end, hey, you take advantage of those drops and use it to accumulate more physical while you can.
Yep, if you can, do it. So, well, where do you fall on the heated topic of price manipulation? I mean, if you're a big believer the trend says it's going to be higher next year, then clearly, you know, if there is manipulation, you don't view it as being successful. Where do you fall on that for gold and silver?
Well, it is successful, actually. It's successful in keeping it in check. It's probably part of the reason why it's been such a consistent trend higher. I mean, every year it almost, it's not like it's 50% and it's, or 25% and it's 50% 1 year and zero the next. It's just pretty consistently 20 or 25% a year, and it's because of that presence of what we call the cartel, the bullion bank cartel, or on my site we refer to them as the evil empire. It is their suppressive tactics that keep price in check. We can hope that one day they will exit the market and leave gold and silver free to trade and actually find a true valuation. But unfortunately, that isn't coming anytime soon. And I should stress, I've been very open and forthright about this ever since I've had a website. People have wondered how it is I'm able to, you mentioned earlier, Chris, the short-term price targets with some relatively high degree of accuracy. I can do that because the markets are manipulated. The gold and silver markets are manipulated. I can't. What I do does not, believe me, if you looked at my trading account and looked at my success trying to trade gold or not gold, but corn or soybeans or crude or something like that, I do just as badly as the average guy. The reason why I am successful in forecasting gold and silver is because they are manipulated. Because once you understand that the bullion banks, particularly J.P. Morgan and silver, are in there trying to stack the deck in their favor, then you use some simple technical analysis and you begin to see where they're going to act, where they're going to place some sell orders to try to start a cascading waterfall-like selling by tripping stops. It's not real hard. I mean, it's pretty basic stuff, but once you admit to yourself that this does take place, it begins forecasting where price is going. It makes forecasting where price is going pretty easy. I'm in the camp. It's funny, I haven't ever really met Bill Murphy of GATA. We talked once on one of my podcasts, and I've not really read a lot of his work or Chris Powell's work. It's not like I read that stuff and a light went off and I said, aha, yes, these guys, but I respect what they do, but I it's not like I'm just simply parroting what they've said. I've come to all these conclusions myself just in years of following gold and silver. What my experience has been just jibes with what their experiences and their data show. And
right.
So to me, it's a quite clear case of what takes place.
You know, I traded pretty actively for a while, and I saw manipulation all over the place, not in just gold and silver. I mean all kinds of markets. So part of my market philosophy is that they're rigged. And one of the ways I know they're rigged is when you see the four biggest banks turn in 100% trading win ratios off their prop desks, right? Obviously, they're not trading because trading involves risk. So they're doing something else, right? And when I was very actively short home builders in 2006, 7, and 8, I would watch them absolutely go the wrong direction on earnings reports that were absolutely in line with what I was expecting, you know, and very painful short moments to sort of ride out. And I realized through that experience that that there is very, very asymmetrical information. That's part one. So I had access to information at the retail level that was very much different from, you know, the books that the rest of the world could see, I guess. And the second thing I learned was that if the price moves went in the direction that I'm going to call the powers that be would favor, there was really no inquiry. There was no looking into those things. They were just sort of left unexplained, and the people would throw their hands up and say, those are markets, I guess, right? And so simple example, like I would notice that when there were big down days in the markets, the systems would get pulled, right? They somehow didn't work when computers had to put a minus symbol in front of stuff, you know? And on big up days, there was never any sort of like circuit breaking or, you know, systems going down or rule 48s or any of this other stuff. You know, it was just, I noticed this asymmetry that as long as things were going in the right direction, I've got air quotes up, the right direction. Once I developed that view, I actually became a better trader because I stopped trading on technicals and fundamentals and I started trading like a criminal. I would just ask where do I think somebody might want these prices to go, and often that was a better, more useful sort of a trading position for me than all of the technical and fundamental analysis put together.
Right. No, and absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%. And you can see it. I just wrote this afternoon before we started visiting. I finished up a post to my site about the events of just today. In gold and silver. We see this quite often where the prices of gold and silver they decline rather sharply after hours, after COMEX trading hours on the Globex.
Yep.
It's akin to, because volume is so thin there, a little bit of money thrown at the market, any new paper shorts can have a rather dramatic impact in that. Fundamentally, I guess your readers probably know how this works, or your listeners probably know how this works, but at any given price, there's an equal number of buyers and sellers. In a thinly traded after-hours market, there's just a few on each side. Well, if you come in there with 1,000 contracts of silver to sell, it might fill 100 at 35, and it might fill another 50 at 34.95, and it might fill another 100 at 34.90, and the price just keeps getting marked down until there's enough bidders found to satisfy that whole order. Well, by the time that's done, it might be 34.50 or 34.25. And in the after-hours market, when no one is there, when the volume isn't there to absorb those big orders, you can take a dollar out, you can take 75 cents out really quickly. We saw it, it just happened 2 hours ago. And that's money you don't get back. It's not like there's then a reset tomorrow morning when the COMEX opens back up to where it was when the COMEX closed the day before. So if they can come in and raid the price of silver for 50 or 75 cents when nobody's around, hey, well, that's the new price.
I know. And we saw that in that big rundown from when it lost 25% from 50 down into the 30s, right?
Exactly.
Where did that start? That started Sunday night at 1:30 in the morning, Monday morning, right? And who's trading then? It's like they're trading cattle in Hawaii, and all of a sudden cattle get sold like crazy in Hawaii, and Oklahoma wakes up and finds out it's 25% poor. I mean, how does that work?
Exactly. And that is where the manipulation has a lasting impact. Because you can't get that money back. You take a dollar out, and it's a dollar gone. And it takes a whole bunch of new buy orders, a whole bunch of new speculative longs and commercial longs to come in and bid it back up to where it was before that raid. And so they're always going to be in there. I guess the ultimate question is, at whose behest are they doing this? But nonetheless, they're in there controlling price, managing the ascent, if you will, to create this illusion that there's still confidence in the dollar, that there's still that everything's all is well, and that it's okay to go buy a new car, you know, and that the economy is still humming along. It's just an active part of maintaining that illusion. And one day that will all, the house of cards will fall in on itself. But it's hard to tell when that's going to be.
I don't know this for sure, but I have very strong suspicion. I put money on this, that if the reverse were true, and Sunday night at 1:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, silver vaulted up 25%. You'd wake up the next morning and they would undo a bunch of trades. They would close COMEX. They would launch an inquiry. They would, all kinds of things would happen. They'd look for who was responsible. They would say that was unacceptable. But when it went down 25%, they're just like, oh, well, you know, markets, that's markets, right? We're not going to look into that really. So that's what I mean by an asymmetry. I just believe that as long as things are moving in the right direction, and I believe you're right, that down is quote unquote the right direction for precious metals because of the signaling event. I mean, come on, when Ben Bernanke writes an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal and says, listen, we're very pleased with where stocks are, and we're very happy with our support to the markets that enable stocks to be higher because higher stock markets signals the right things to the people, right? He didn't say anything about, you know, that stocks should have a correct price for the risk involved and for the opportunities that are looking forward. He said that it's an important signaling device, and that's how they look at these things. And, of course, if you don't believe the Fed has thought about gold as a signaling device, you need to go back study history, starting with the 69 gold pool and Reuben's strong dollar policy, you know, with Taylor's paradox, all that stuff, right? So they've been focused on it a long time.
Oh, absolutely, and they'll continue to. I mean, if gold was trading at $5,000 an ounce tonight, what would that tell you about the global level of confidence? And when it was getting ready to go through 2,000 just 60 days ago, what does that tell the world about the level of confidence in fiat money? Or simply just do perform this exercise. Take a look at the U.S. dollar index for the last 5 years. It's essentially flat. And again, the dollar index is, I guess, a picture of the U.S. dollar versus a basket of global currencies. So in relation to other fiat currencies, the dollar is not the same as it was 5 years ago.
Yep.
But gold has gone from $400 to $1,800 tonight.
Yep.
So in relation to, it's lost what, if you want to look at it that way, what, lost 75% of its value versus gold? Is that the right math? They have to maintain this illusion, and most importantly, and I guess I kind of touched upon it earlier, if the true measure of inflation was actually out there, not this CPI nonsense at 2%, but an actual real goods that impact a real, in this case, American family in the pocketbook, if you had that true measure of inflation printing it what it really is, 10, 12, maybe 15%, you can't. There's no way. There would be no bids for Treasury notes at 2%. Why would you guarantee yourself a loss, an annualized loss of 13%, net real interest rate? Nobody would do that. So rates would have to go higher. And as we discussed earlier, rates moving above these historically low levels just rapidly, it just increases the speed at which the Ponzi unravels. And so they can't have it. And so they'll continue to maintain this charade of kind of economic normality. And one of the elements of that charade is suppressing the price of metals as best they can.
Well, I think it's a great thing because I get to accumulate more at a better subsidized price. I think that's incredible. But history is very clear on this. Negative real rates of interest are just an incredible time to hold gold. Just on that one thing, if you want to keep it simple, I know you said you like to keep it simple.
Yeah.
Right there, for somebody who doesn't want to talk about monetary policy or potential manipulation or how markets work or any of that, if you hold gold during negative real rates of interest, it's historically, that's a very good thing to do. Simple.
Yes, exactly.
Very
exactly. And that's where we are right now. And we'll, I mean, when that's not going to stop like next week.
No.
It's going to be like that quite a ways into the future. So
if it does, I'll be very surprised. It's like, whoa, Paul Volcker came back. That's crazy.
Well, you know, and he pulled that off 30 years ago at a time when, I mean, he couldn't pull that off today. I know.
Too many things to list. We were a net positive trade export nation. We were a net creditor to the world. You name it. It would much less leverage in the system. Everything. Didn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Wouldn't work
so
out.
Someone, someone hoping for that type of miracle 30 years on. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
I know. So here we are. So the great experiment, you know, it's going to reach its conclusion here at some point. Here's an interesting question for me. Is what indicators are you going to be looking at to determine that it's time to get out of this metal and the PM bull market is more or less over, and it's time to get capital out of PMs into something else? What's the exit strategy?
Well, for me, the ultimate exit strategy is you are converting your paper money into physical money. Now, what I'm planning for is that someday there will be a new currency regime, a new global, it may be regional reserve currencies, like a North American currency, a Eastern Pacific currency, and some type of newly formed euro. So then those will have to be asset-backed once we've all learned our lessons about the dangers and the fallacy of fiat money. So if you accumulate, if you transfer your money out of fiat into hard assets now, into physical metal, then at some date in the future, you'll convert your physical metal back into whatever the new money is. Or you'll take your physical metal and you'll trade it for some other hard asset like land, something like that. So I don't see a time, Chris, where, okay, hey, all the problems are fixed, so let's trade out. I'm going to sell all my gold and silver and convert it all back into Federal Reserve notes. I'm just turd. I mean, what do I know? But that's the way I'm planning it. I just don't see that happening. I think ultimately you'll convert your hard metal back into a paper, hard asset backed currency, or into some other hard asset.
That's what I'm looking to do. I've had a ratio that I've been telling my subscribers about for probably 5 or 6 years now, which is that this was the original ratio at which I moved into gold. I said that when I could trade an ounce of gold for an acre of productive land, I would start making that trade, because that's a ratio that goes back centuries. And I thought, well, that's a decent starting place. And of course, people were laughing at me because, you know, that was during the run up in the whole real estate thing when I was holding that view. That was crazy talk. I'm looking around. I can actually start to make that trade this year for certain pieces of land.
It depends on if you're in Iowa or Nebraska, places like that. Yeah, it's getting pretty close.
Yep.
Then that would probably be, like you said, the historical. There's a reason why there's a historical relationship there.
Yep.
Because it's been that way for a long time.
Yep, and I'm not going to go all in at this point. I'm going to nibble because I think overshoot's a possibility here. So,
sure.
The beach ball's been held under so long. I just think that, you know, when it does go, I'll have better opportunities. But I've never really made my investing style all in, all out. I tend to move in. So I first started moving into gold and silver in 2002, and I did it in 2003 and 2004. I just kept accumulating. So for those who are looking to increase their exposure to precious metals, or maybe start, do you have any strongly felt guidance for how they should go about building that exposure? You know, physical versus vaulting versus paper, like how you accumulate, all of that.
Well, it depends on the individual, first and foremost, obviously. But for the average guy, you know, that's trying to figure out a way to either put his kid through college or get him there or pay for his daughter's wedding and trying to figure out how he's going to get mom and dad in the nursing home. I mean, got all these different concerns. And maybe has an IRA, you know, that rolled out an old 401k and is looking at that going, what? Mike, you can't buy gold or gold funds in a 401k at work, but I've got this IRA that I rolled out the last time I changed my job. You know, there are ways you can invest in that IRA if that's your main asset. Whether if you want to just stick with the traditional route, you can buy miners, high quality miners. You buy a basket of them, kind of almost like how people talked about back in the dot-com days. You know, you'd buy 10 internet stocks in the hope that one was going to take over the world, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might buy 10 miners, knowing that, you know, one or two may come up, you know, dry holes, but the rest of them will eventually take off. You could buy ETFs. I really encourage people to stay away from the big ones, GLD and SLV. And look instead at like the Sprott Physical Trust out of Canada, things like that. There are companies where that will help you buy your own gold in your IRA. That's possible as well. And then as it comes all the way down to just simply stacking the metal, getting a dealer that you trust. There are several of them that are available online that I've worked with before, where you can just go on and they'll send you, you know, a nice shiny sleeve of Canadian Maple Leafs or Silver Eagles, something like that. But for most folks, that's how they do it. It's through that their traditional investments of their IRA, but instead of owning, you know, the Vanguard S&P fund, they own, you know, the First Eagle Gold Fund instead, something like that. That's probably the main base exposure most people do, is they try to kind of put their words into deeds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed too, over the years, I've had the opportunity to work with people who got paralyzed by gold prices, because one of the things you can't do is open a paper without reading about how gold's in a bubble. It's been in a bubble since about $500, and every $100, it's in a bubble again. And you know, that's just some really sloppy journalism and displaying a bias and a set of beliefs, and that's all fine. But still, I find people often, particularly if they haven't yet pulled the trigger, they get a little paralyzed because they say, oh, you know, I can't buy it now because it's at 1900. And then it pulls all the way back to 1550. And then they go, well, it's really falling now. I'm scared where it's going to go. Anyway, they get paralyzed because it's either down too much or up too much or something like that. What would your advice be for these people?
I get that all the time, too. I get, you know, I have friends that know that I'm turd and I do what I do, and they'll, hey, I hear you write this website. Well, why should I buy gold now? It's going down. It can't stay up here. It's too high. And I look at them and I say, well, who told you it's too high? Well, I read in the paper. I saw on CNBC or whatever. You know, well, whatever. All I can tell you is it's going to be higher a year from now than it is now. I mean, it might go down first. It might go up more. And what I encourage people to do is, many people are familiar with the concept of dollar cost averaging, which is kind of an old financial planner, financial advisor term for people that are working their way into the market to set aside, kind of set up an investment plan, kind of like your 401k, where you're just putting in money every 2 weeks or every once a month. You buy some shares of a mutual fund or a stock, thinking that sometimes you're going to buy high and sometimes you're going to buy low, but it's the regular disciplined purchases that kind of average it all out to kind of a lower average price and take some of the emotion out of it. I would encourage people to set up almost a dollar cost averaging of physical metal, to just say, look, I'm gonna take some money and I'm gonna buy some on the, you know, the first of every month or the 15th or whatever, and just continually do it. And that way you will take it, you'll buy high sometimes, but you'll also buy some dips too.
Yep.
So that works for me as well.
Yep, I totally agree with that approach. It's I'm just, again, I'm never an all-in kind of a guy. Now, I've been trading, you know, I traded gold and silver. That was when I was a trader. I had futures trading in addition to my shorts position on home builders. And I found that I just couldn't predict those markets. I tried. I just couldn't do it. They have a mind of their own. So,
yeah.
At any rate, so I found that dollar cost averaging in that market was my best bet. And then hanging on and holding on. And the reason one of the reasons I advocate physical, and this is because for me, is that when I hold paper stuff that I can sell at the click of a mouse button, I tend to do that. I tend to be a little active that way. And my best holdings have been the physical holdings, which I've accumulated. And then because it's kind of a pain to, you know, it's not impossible. I have sold it and bought it and stuff. But it's just enough of a barrier that I kind of go, not worth it, you know.
Yeah. Like you're going to take your sleeve of Eagles and go marching down to the whatever or put them on eBay or something. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so that's helped me, because riding the bull is the most important thing, not getting shook off. That's hard. That's hard work right there. Richard Russell would agree. So in addition to all these precious metal ideas, you cover a number of other topics on your blog, such as the recent implosion of MF Global. Thank you, John Corzine. Very well done there. And all the implications that those things forebode. For those that are looking to preserve as much of their wealth, say quality of life too, as in the next decade as they can, what are the key trends should they be paying attention to here?
Well, as we talked about, it's that macroeconomic stuff first and foremost, and that the only, I guess, Keynesian recipe that works is if you're able to grow your economy faster than you're growing your debt, to kind of keep that debt to GDP ratio low, or at least below 100. And so you've got to really pay attention to what's going on in the economy. That would be the first big indicator. Again, if suddenly if they try to tell you that GDP is growing, but at the same time unemployment is still at 9% and higher, it gets back to that, what we talked about earlier, that I guess we're kind of on the side of it earlier about the perception management of the government to try to convince you that all is well. But I think you've got to look at the macro, and you've got to try, as hard as it seems for the average guy, you've got to try to pay attention to what's going on globally. And I think it's very easy to say, why do I give? I don't care about Greece. Oh, and now they're trying to tell me that Italy is bad. Oh, who cares? I mean, I'm still going to go to Italy every once in a while. I love going to Rome. You know,
mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm not going to worry about it. No, there's more to it than that. I mean, everybody's connected now, and Germany can bail out Greece, but the Italian economy is almost 2/3 the size of Germany's. So they can't bail out Germany, or they can't bail out Italy. You've got to pay attention to that. And as you're paying attention, you've got to try to think of the end game. You know, what's going to happen? How can they manage all that debt and then the counterparty risk that comes with all that debt and then all the outstanding derivatives? In the end, it all becomes about how much money can you print to try to paper over these problems and just keep kicking the can down the road, if you will. And as long as they're going to continue printing money, that's just going to continue to make investments in precious metals that much more attractive. So you got to look at your regional here in the U.S., you got to look at the U.S. economy and what it's doing and the political structure, but you've got to take time and understand that what happens in Europe is going to have a major impact on how things go here, too.
Yeah, everything is so cross-correlated and cross-linked and interlinked, and, you know, we've got our 600 to 1 quadrillion in derivatives still standing out there, and nobody really understands all that. So it's almost like if somebody said, you know, they're looking at this one organism, this one body that happens to be the world economy now, and they say, you know, why should I care if my right leg is infected? I don't know. You know, well, it's connected, so it really matters a lot. And this the chief risk that really concerns me at this moment in time, here we are in early November of 2011, is the idea that the banks themselves are so interlinked and they're so wrapped up in the sovereign debt issue and all of that sort of very complicated fancy stuff that's going on with the EFSF obscures just one simple fact, which is that there's too much debt. That deleveraging is going to happen. Somebody's going to take the haircut. The longer they wait to see if they can push that haircut onto an unsuspecting taxpayer, which I think they have less chance of doing in Europe, by the way. And if they can't do that and the whole thing sort of falls apart, we face the risk of really interesting moment of financial system instability. That's another thing that correlates beautifully with a rising price of gold is just uncertainty and system stress. Those two things I think we've got in spades right now.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we mentioned it earlier. It sounds, and I know the funny looks I get from family and friends sometimes when I talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you're some kind of nutcase. What are you talking about? You'd have some silver for barter? What? Well, how would that? And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I remember I was on a flight one night back in September of 2008, and I distinctly remember looking down at the window someplace over about Tennessee, thinking, how many of those people know down there that we're on the verge of complete global financial collapse, you know, where the ATM just doesn't work, where the bank is closed, and you can't just get some cash and go to Sam's Club and buy yourself, you know, some food and some, I mean, we were that close, and we'll probably be that close again. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, but having gotten 3 years of an awakening to prepare, I have to use that time to prepare myself for that possible eventuality. And it's, like you said, everybody's interconnected, and all these banks do business globally, and they all share each other's, you know, that counterparty risk. And so all it's going to take is one domino to fall, and they all kind of start tumbling into each other. And then you've got to be mentally and financially prepared for that, just as almost like a just in case. You know, what is it? You hope for the best and plan for the worst, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And a little bit of preparation goes a long way. And here's the funny part. Many of these preparations, the opportunity cost of them is low. So I advise people to keep some cash out of the bank. What are you missing out on? 0% on your demand account?
Right.
You know, so it doesn't really matter if it's in the bank or out of the bank from an opportunity standpoint, except you actually are more liquid with it out of the bank if you can get your hands on it. Same thing with gold and silver. I mean, these assets, like if you held stock, I can show you a bunch of stocks where if you held them, they went to zero. Gold will never go to zero. Never.
That's true.
Right? It might go to something lower, but it's not going to zero. So when I look at these and I just think about the risks, and here's the interesting part about this to me is the idea that what you and I are talking about is just simple, prudent risk management that anybody ought to be thinking about and planning for, and still a lot of people won't do it, mostly because I it's an emotional barrier, it's a belief-based, it's something, but it doesn't have anything to do with prudence and really thinking through the risks and managing those risks, and that's fine. More and more people are waking up to this story. I find people who a year ago I couldn't engage in this conversation are now engaging in it. They, you know, it's we're there in that conversation. So I think you're doing good work and helping people figure out a way to preserve their wealth and stay on top of these things. For those readers who want to find out more about you and your work, where do they do that and how do they follow you?
Well, the website is TF, as in Turd Ferguson, Metals Report, metalsreport.com, all one word. We try to, it's a different side. It was not anything that I sat down with pen to paper and drew up a business plan and said, okay, here, now this is really going to be a neat deal. This all just kind of developed out of the blue, and I realized, frankly, from being on the internet, that, and from having been a financial person, that there's not a wealth of readily available, unbiased precious metals information out there.
Mm-hmm.
You could go see your typical stockbroker and tell them that you want to, you know, buy all the stuff that you and I just talked about, and so therefore you want to buy some gold or you want to buy a gold miner. First, that stockbroker's going to look at you like you got two heads.
Yep.
And think you're some kind of nut. And if you persist, then the stockbroker might patronize you in a way and reach back into his credenza and pull out a report on some miner with whom the firm has an investment banking relationship and therefore has a rating and a research report. And you don't know it. I mean, we found all that out 10 years ago about the conflicts of interest between the sell-side firms and their analysts and the companies that they follow. And I mean, it's a joke, and so you can't get good information. And so that's why I started the site, because I thought, well, you know, with the success of things like Wikipedia, where it is user-provided content, it's not always going to be 100% accurate, but at least you know that, you know, well, maybe that's not the best example with Wikipedia, but at least you know people are trying. They're trying to tell you their honest opinion. I thought, well, what if we built something like that in the metals arena, where, yeah, you've got my content, but the real wealth of knowledge is in, like, the forums and the bulletin board section where you can go in and find user or other member-provided information on certain miners or certain commodities or bullion dealers or coin dealers, things like that. That's where all of a sudden it dawned on me there was an opportunity. So that's why we built the site. That's what it's there for, is for people to go interact with like-minded people. We have a rule there. You got to treat others the way you want to be treated, because so many internet sites turn into these kind of verbal sword fights, name calling, and it just turns me off. And so the number one rule of the site is you got to, like I said, treat others the way you want to be treated. So we try to always keep it cordial and helpful, and I think that kind of draws people to the site too. So it's, again, tfmetalsreport.com. We're just trying to help as best we can to, like you said, help people prepare for what is most assuredly coming. The last thing I would add to that, Chris, and what is challenging, and I'm sure you've seen this too in working with your subscribers, where we are headed is unlike anywhere where we've been, at least in recent memory. I mean, there may be some octogenarians out there that remember what it was like before the Great Depression and during the Great Depression and before World War II. But it's a world like that where we're headed to. You know, all I've ever known, all my friends and family, even my parents really have ever known, is this hegemonic United States you know, that was the world power and provided the world's reserve currency. And we could print as much as we wanted to then export the inflation to all the other poor saps that had to took our dollars when we bought their cheap stuff. You know, and those days are over. And that's a really hard concept. If you haven't had personal experience with something else, it's a really hard concept to get your arms around. You know, that we're not, that the United States isn't going to be this huge economic and military superpower. Just because it always has been doesn't mean it always will be. And as we talked about, the numbers and the fundamentals suggest that it's not always going to be. And so you've got to kind of prepare yourself that tomorrow's not going to be like today, that we're in a new paradigm, and try to intellectually figure out, okay, how do I survive and prosper in this new world, knowing that it's coming. And that's what we try to do. I know that's what you try to do, and it's our job, Chris, to try to help as many as we can.
I absolutely agree. And like you, I didn't have a business plan, and I didn't pencil any of this out. I just started doing something that frankly, I created what I wanted to see on the net but couldn't find, just like you did. It's like, where is it? Oh, I'll create it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it turns out that the growth industry out there right now happens to be purveying in accurate information as best we know it, right? And you're probably like me. When the information changes, you'll change too, whatever that happens to be. But right now, we've got a set of trends that are pretty clearly in place. There's been precious little to deflect me from my main storyline over the past few years. And so here we are in the middle of it. I used to say that, you know, the future is going to be really different from the past. We're in it. I think we're in the middle of it, is my view. What we're seeing in the world now, you know, what we open the newspaper to in the morning, it's here. And so I really want to thank you for your time. And the idea here is that there will be more official responses to try and fix an unfixable problem. History's pretty consistent on this. We're going to try and print our way out of that. And even though we try and do that, the amount of system-level stress and risk and all these other things just say, listen, maybe it's time to take your chips off the table or some of them. Go get a drink until you understand how the card's been dealt in this hand. And gold presents one way to do that, silver too. So
absolutely right.
So, Turd, I just want to thank you so much for your time, and hope we can do this again.
Chris, my pleasure. Anytime you'd like to do it again, we'll do it. Please keep up the good work. I enjoy your site. I know a lot of the folks that read my site go to your site. And so please keep up your diligent hard work. We all appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you. This is Chris of ChrisMartinson.com signing off.
This concludes this podcast by Chris Martinson. To gain further insight into where things stand today and what might happen tomorrow, please visit ChrisMartinson.com. That's ChrisMartinson.com. Please join Chris Martinson next time to continue your journey toward awareness, understanding, and action.